Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, we've got a conversation with James Lohman about the future of employment in the sector, both in terms of pay and how retailers and colleagues are perhaps more appreciated now than they were before this pandemic started. But first though, I'd like to update on some of the latest developments that have come through over the last week. The biggest thing to make sure you're aware of is the extension of the furlough scheme. Now, this scheme is being extended to October, but there are going to be additional requirements on businesses to contribute to the scheme in the months leading up to then. So let's go through it. From August, employers will be asked to pay national insurance and pension contributions. Then from September, the government's going to reduce its contribution from 80% to 70%, with employers being asked to pick up the additional 10% of salaries. And then in October, that final employer contribution rises to 20% of salary, with the government contributing 60%. Any employers, I should say, who want to put their new employees onto furlough scheme need to do so by June the 10th. So if that's something that you're looking into, there isn't much time left to get that sorted. We've got all the details explained on our website. Just go to acs.org.uk and click on the COVID-19 hub on the homepage. Next up, test and trace measures are now in place, which asks anyone who shows symptoms to get tested, and if they test positive, to inform a contact tracer about anyone that they've had close contact with. Those people will then be contacted themselves and asked to self-isolate to control the spread of the virus. Now, at the moment, this doesn't include widespread usage of the app that's been trialled and developed on the Isle of Wight, as government is still looking at the detail of how that's going to work in practice. Keep up to date with the government websites for usage of that app and the rollout. But at the moment, there are no further details. I think that's still looking for a bit of extra development from the government side, just to make sure they get everything right. Now, the final thing from me before we get into the interview is around the frequency of the government's daily press conferences. They've announced that future broadcasts will only take place on weekdays due to low ratings at weekends. And I guess this signals perhaps the start of a longer term gradual slowdown in the number of briefings that are taking place. But for now, we're still getting a daily update at 5 p.m. on weekdays, one of which a week at least will be hosted by the Prime Minister. And we will, of course, continue to update members every day straight after the press conference takes place. So keep checking your inbox for that. Let's get into the interview then. And we're talking to James about the future of employment in the convenience sector, how stores and their staff and colleagues are being appreciated a bit more, and some of the tensions around pay and working practices that stores and retailers are going to have to deal with. Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, Chris.
Good. So I thought I'd get a discussion with you on the podcast to talk about the future of employment, especially at the moment as we're right in the middle of the furlough scheme. There's a lot of uncertainty about future work in the sector, and there's been a lot of attention on the people that are going out to work every day and the people that have been really on the front lines during this whole pandemic. And I just want to take it back to the start initially, and when the government was looking at what the list of key workers or what became essential workers is, how important was it for our sector to be seen as part of that group of essential workers?
I think it was really, really important, probably actually on two levels, some very practical levels. So it meant that people who were working in stores could travel around more easily, and that we provided the pro forma letter, for example, to show to people if people could show to police or others if they were challenged. Also, it meant that the children of people working in our sector, where there's a household with both people working as key workers, their kids could go to school. And that was you know, a really important part of it. But I think also on a more sort of level of perception of how people perceive our sector, and the reality is our sector pays at or close to the statutory minimums. And there's no reason we shouldn't pretend that isn't the case. That is, some retailers pay a little more. That's great, but that's broadly where people working in the stores themselves. That's what pay rates tend to be across most of the sector. But the quality of the work, the security of work, the fact they're local jobs. And we've been doing the colleague survey with ACS for a few years. And really what that shows up every year is just how those factors other than pay are really important in people's lives and really important in their decision to work in the local store and in the careers they have and the jobs they have in our sector. So it really, I think, pointed up that our sector is It is essential. We define as essential stores. We saw this debate about non-essential stores opening up, which is due very soon. But being defined as essential stores and the people working in those stores being defined as key workers, I think that really changed the sort of respect and status that was there for people working in our sector. And of course, on a Thursday night clap for carers that we've seen until very recently. I'm not sure what's happening now. I think it may have drawn a line under that. But yes, that was clapping to people working in NHS primarily, and that's great, quite rightly too. But actually, the number of the degree to which other key workers are explicitly recognised, and I think people working in shops, very much chief among them. And obviously, I would say this, wouldn't I? But I think people working in convenience stores, more than anyone else, really, in terms of the providing the service we have over the past few weeks and past few months. So, yeah, I think that key worker definition as part of a number of things is quite an important moment, actually.
Yeah, because I think we've been talking for years about stores being at the heart of the communities and colleagues really valuing that social interaction. But it was almost sort of bubbling away in the background, I guess, in the psyche of the nation. Whereas with this pandemic here, we were talking about stores being literally the only ones that are keeping communities going in a lot of cases, especially for those that are vulnerable. And I was talking to Harriet from Plunkett Foundation a few weeks ago, and she was saying that in the community stores, those volunteers that are running stores, not only are they getting a wider range of volunteers, younger people volunteering to work in shops, which is fantastic, but also those volunteers, one of the most popular things that they're doing is checking the social distancing in the queues outside, because it means they get a chance to talk to people. And I think those people really value that. And I think there's some new stats out from YouGov as well, saying that the people working in stores themselves feel more appreciated now than they did before the pandemic, which I think is really important. But how do we keep up that momentum? Because we've built this image of stores, which is absolutely right in that they are keeping those communities going. How does that last beyond the pandemic?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, to some extent, the nature of the job we do is that we probably are taking for granted quite a lot. And to some extent, there's nothing wrong with that. You always want to be such an integral, mainstream part of that community you're serving that actually probably people don't notice you because you're just doing a good job and they're using you and you meet their needs. And to some extent, people notice you when you're not doing everything they want or you've got problems with stock or other things. So, in a way, I don't have a problem with the fact that we've probably been taken for granted a bit as a sector. I think that's actually, in some ways, quite a positive thing. But there is this is one of the big debates now, is to what extent will the way that people behave over this time and using a local shop more, among other changes, how much will they stay as longer-term trends, longer-term behaviours, and how much will they be something which is just of this time? And that's longer. I can't possibly answer that on this podcast, and we'll find out over time, and we'll do lots of other work to try and get into that. But it seems to me that the key within that is that relationship that you build up with your customers and new customers coming into the store. And I think there's great opportunities there. I think it's that's definitely something we can really focus on. There's new relationships being built up, new members of staff coming into the business, new customers coming to the store. And so I think that to some extent it will remain. It will be a relationships that continue and that a trend that continues towards local shopping. Against that, and I always say this, let's be aware we're going to emerge from this into a pretty tough recession. Hopefully not for too long. Hopefully not too deep. But it's going to be a very, very tough time. Stuff that most in our lifetimes we've probably never seen quite to this extent. So there'll also be other factors very important, notably price. So that's one of the issues about building those relationships, but it's also about communicating and explaining the value that you offer to that local community and how you are a good value place to shop in terms of, saving people travel time and the range of things that you offer in the store.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is going to be probably the most stark when you talk about this recession that we're going into is about the number of people that are perhaps currently on furlough and may not be returning to work, or people that have already been laid off. And that's part of the subject of a new report from the Resolution Foundation, which talks about the future of work, the future of workers' rights and pay. And it is a challenge, isn't it? Because, they raise a lot of issues around a lack of stability and a lack of flexibility, especially in low-paid work. But I think there's a counterpoint to that, isn't there? Because what you said is that just a moment ago, that it is not all about pay necessarily. There are a lot of positive factors that affect the way that people value their job. So with the concerns that the Resolution Foundation are raising about things like increasing workers' rights and ending zero-hours contracts and pay, where do we sit in that? Because they talk about the lack of stability and the potential for jobs to be lost, but we're not quite in the heart of that issue, are we?
No, I think we're not. I think there are two, well, there are lots of issues, but there are probably two distinct issues here. One is about this low pay, and that is an issue. Now, let's not have the whole debate on that. We're putting our evidence into the Low Pay Commission next week in respect of how they think about national living wage and the statutory wage rate. So we'll probably deal with that elsewhere. But there is an issue around and political debate about pay rates. But I think the more relevant debate that's going to be really race up the agenda, and we saw it with the Resolution Foundation report, and we'll see it with other interventions, I'm sure, the real issue is about stability and security of that work. And that feeds into what's more important to people now in their lives generally. And I think security, sustainability, resilience, community are going to become more important to people coming out of this. Because you know, we've seen jobs like in the sort of gig economy become more prevalent in recent years. And it seems to me, that they're probably quite low paid as well, those jobs in reality. And yes, they offer flexibility to some extent, but the security and stability of those jobs seems to me to be a real issue. And I think it'd be completely wrong if we think only about wage rates and don't think about the other things that are really important to people in their jobs. And really, to answer your question, I think that this period of time will make people more conscious of those other factors in the jobs that they do, make them more conscious of the stability, the security. Now, we've been, and to this extent, fortunate in that we haven't, the hospitality sector, it's not their fault that they've seen their trade fall off a cliff and that they've had to furlough lots of their colleagues, and maybe they might have longer term issues for those colleagues. It's not their fault, that's happened, obviously. But in our sector, generally speaking, being able to keep people's jobs, if anything, bring some new colleagues into the business. But more, more generally than that, that localness, that link to local community, that playing a part in tackling what has been a global crisis, I think is something that will stick with the people working in the stores as much as it's going to stick with the people who've used the stores as customers in those communities. So I think it does exacerbate not just what we offer as a business to consumers, but also what we offer to colleagues working in stores.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I just want to pick up on one thing you mentioned there about the gig economy. And we've been a bit of arm's length from the gig economy in that most of the jobs in the sector are secure, they are sustainable, they are flexible. But with the increase and pretty astronomical increase in home deliveries going out from the sector, with 600,000 a week at the moment, home deliveries going out. And right now, most of those are being done internally. The retailer is either getting in their car and fulfilling those deliveries themselves, or members of staff are helping out. But if this momentum on home delivery is going to continue in the long term, it probably has to involve those gig economy workers to some extent, whether it's that Deliveroo kind of model or taxi drivers or whatever it might be. How do we balance that then? Because those jobs are less sustainable, they are more susceptible to those contracts, and we know that people want free delivery. They don't want they don't want to pay extra for that kind of thing. So how do we play a role in that if we want to keep the momentum on home delivery going?
Yeah, I think this is one of the most important things for us to watch, monitor, and learn from each other on, actually, over this period of time. And having a conversation with a retailer yesterday, a few weeks ago, implemented the home delivery service and really thought about how to make this sustainable. But there are some very different dynamics. So really, before this happened, there was some home delivery going in our sector. Some of that was essentially community delivery. So particularly some more vulnerable customers, retailers taking around shopping, and maybe with a small fixed charge, but probably not really done as a scalable economic thing, but as part of that overall community service. Absolutely brilliant, of course, fantastic. There was another developing strand, which was working with some of those companies that tend to use gig economy employment models like Uber Eats, Deliveroo, those sorts of companies. And that was working in our sector where you had premium pricing and or a significant delivery charge. And it particularly was working, it wasn't solely for this, don't oversimplify it, but it was particularly working for alcohol late at night, and for products that people needed, you know, in an emergency or almost something they just particularly wanted at that time, prepared to pay a significant premium on to get at that time. And that's absolutely fine. If someone wants that at that time and you can offer the service and it pays for itself, then brilliant. You know, why wouldn't you do that sort of thing? But that's a very different scenario to where we are now, where we've got, that it's more like the growth is not coming from that market so much. It's coming much more from those more vulnerable households and people who need that home delivery, because there are many more of them. Because a vulnerable household could include me or you if we had symptoms. You know, our ability to shop and get what we needed would be limited. So that the many, many more people needing those delivery services and able to step in to provide that. Now, at the moment, we've done that working with volunteer groups. As you say, the retailers themselves going around and making those deliveries in many cases. And we may have done it for a small delivery charge, but most retailers not premiumizing most of their products in doing that. It sort of fits into that community service. How can that be scaled and made into a sustainable thing? And is that going to be through using some of those third-party options? And I think, you know, retailers will come to their own choices about that. But one of the factors in that, going back to the early conversation really, is about, well, what does that mean in terms of colleagues then? What does that mean in terms of the people who are working with us in the business? The fact they're subcontracted out for a third-party provider kind of doesn't matter. In the case, what are we offering as jobs in our community? And that is something that retail is going to have to consider in terms of how do we want to fulfill these deliveries? What does that mean in terms of the people we're working with? What does it mean in terms of our customers? And what's the commercial model? I have no answer to those questions, not for the first time, but I think that's a really, really live debate at the moment. I really hope one way or another we can keep hold of some of this delivery business, because I think we're perfectly placed to provide it. And it's clearly in line with what people are going to be looking for a bit more, probably not at the levels they are now, because as people hopefully get back to work and we move past this episode, or certainly move past the worst of it, people won't need it to the same extent. But we know anyway, more people want home delivery. It fits in with their lifestyle and what their preferences are. So yeah, incredibly interesting debate, which I'm offering no definitive answers whatsoever, Chris, but interesting debate.
I think that's about right. I mean, essentially the market will decide, but I think what's really important is that where there is demand, that we can keep up with that. And especially where you've got customers that are in a new position of saying, oh, actually, I can get delivery from my local shop and I trust that the fresh is good and I trust that I don't have 100 substitutes and I trust that it's going to come in 24 hours. You know, those are really important factors to be able to capitalize on.
Yeah, maybe in shorter windows than that. Maybe the niche for us is going to be a shorter window delivery. And I think also, you mentioned there as well, one of the other factors that's really important and really positive for our sector is that people would have seen their local shop, whereas maybe they hadn't been in there for a bit, but they sort of went in there maybe initially because they kind of had to. But they've probably been quite impressed, because we track investment in our sector, don't we? And we see a lot of investment goes into our sector, improving the offer, development of ranges. I mean, you know, substantially better offer in your average convenience store, whatever that means, now is where it was 10 years ago and 10 years before that. So this is bringing new customers in. So if that gives them more trust and faith in the fresh in particular, and if they've got used to feeding their families from the local shop and they've been happy with that and that's worked for them, then they're more likely to want to continue to feed their families, but they might want to do it in different ways. They might want to do it through more delivery being offered. It's also worth saying, of course, the supermarket delivery options and Ocado and so on have been under massive pressure at the moment. If we move to a time into the future where they become the less acute pressure, expect them to be trying to take advantage of this as well. Expect them to have strategies to try to grow their market share in this model as well. But also expect them to try and work out, well, how do you make money from home delivery? Because with one or two exceptions, most of those companies haven't been able to make profits through that model, because obviously you're transferring the labor onto picking the product yourself as a business and then delivering it. Whereas if someone comes to the traditional model coming into the store, is that the customer takes in all that labor. So it's something the supermarkets have been at for a long time and haven't fully nailed in terms of making it a profitable model. So we sort of face some of the similar issues now.
Yeah, you've got to assess that risk of it being a good thing to do, but actually something that is losing the store money, both in terms of labor cost and in terms of you know, deliveries and all that kind of thing as well.
But is that worth it for building up that local community, building up the faith, building up the volume? Maybe it is. These are exactly the sort of decisions retailers are going to have to be making going forward. I mean, it's a really exciting time, I think.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're going to have to leave it there, because I know you're getting prepped for a call with ministers this afternoon, as I'm sure you are pretty much most weeks at the moment. Thanks for joining me on the podcast, James, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for listening to the Local Shop Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Local Shop Pod. Subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And keep up to date with the latest information about COVID-19 on our website at acs.org.uk.